And that was the famous Maha Mantra, for those you don't know. So, we will. Let's see. So, we are here at Govardhan, surrounded by devotees, the most sacred place in the universe, for all of you out there in Facebook land. And we're going to have programs every night. Actually, the air is starting to get a little bad now at this time of night. And so tonight we are going to read from the Nectar of Devotion about what's called stimulations for ecstatic love. It's really nice. And so tomorrow is Advaitacharya's appearance day, so we're going to talk about Advaitacharya tomorrow evening. And we have all sorts of other holidays coming, like Lord Nityananda's appearance and different things like that. So, that is interesting. On the way here, on the airplane, I was reading the Ramayana. I really like the Ramayana. I was going to read the Ramayana tonight, but people may criticize me for reading the Ramayana and Govardhan. What kind of rasa bhasa is that? So anyway, so we'll read Nectar of Devotion. So Om Gana Timidandasha, Timidandasha, Om Gana Timidandasha, Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshunan Miditam Gena Tasmai Shikadveda Maha. So this chapter is called Stimulation for Ecstatic Love, and the technical Sanskrit word for that is vibhava. Vibhava means that which stimulates the other bhavas. And there's two aspects to vibhava. I'm not reading from Nectar Devotion right now. I'm just giving you an introduction. Two aspects to vibhava. One is called alambana, and the other one is called udipana. Alambana basically means like Krishna directly. Like if you see Krishna directly, it stimulates your ecstatic love. And udipana means anything related with Krishna, like a peacock feather, like the land of Braj, like a monkey. At least the Braj monkeys remind you of Krishna. So in that, just like the story of Mukunda, Mukunda was a doctor and he was an associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when he was he was sitting on the dais with the Muslim emperor, and someone started fanning the Muslim emperor with a peacock fan. And when he saw that, he fainted in ecstasy and he fell off the dais. And then the emperor came down, the Wab came down, and he said, what's your problem? And Mukunda said, well, it's just epilepsy. And he was just covering for his ecstatic symptoms. Generally, a pure devotee does not like to say, I'm ecstatic. But since, you know, new devotees, they just say, I was ecstatic. That was ecstatic kirtan. That was ecstatic prasadam. That was ecstatic wife you have. You know, a joke. You know, everything becomes ecstasy, isn't it? Devotees misuse or overuse that word. It's ecstatic. So, anyway, a pure devotee doesn't go around saying, I'm in ecstasy. He hides it. But immature devotees, they do use the word ecstatic all the time. I mean, Prabhupada used the word ecstatic, but that relationship to himself generally, I mean, there's exceptions. But you know, Prabhupada never said, I was really ecstatic last night. You know, just Prabhupada was dedicated to pleasing his spiritual master. So anyway, so we're going to read about these stimulations for ecstatic love. Some things, these are Prabhupada's words, some things which give impetus or stimulation to ecstatic love of Krishna are his transcendental qualities, his uncommon activities, his smiling features, his apparel, his garlands, his flute, his buffalo horn, his leg bells, his conch shell, his footprints, his place of the pastimes such as Vrindavan, his favorite plant, Tulsi, his devotee, and the periodical occasions for remembering him. One such occasion for remembrance is Ekadashi, which comes twice a month on the 11th day of the moon, both waning and waxing. On that day, all the devotees remain fasting throughout the night, and continuously chant the glories of the Lord. So, actually, Ekadasi is a special day for remembering Krishna. It's not simply a day to execute austerities. So one accepts those austerities that help him remember Krishna. In other words, if staying awake all night and fasting is just going to make one spaced out, then better not do it. Stay awake all night and fast. I know myself, if I was to fast throughout the entire day, I couldn't concentrate or read. I mean, some of us just can't, whatever, different physical bodies. So I don't. That doesn't mean I'm a demon or not following a codicil. I'm following the purpose of the codicil. That's the difference between those who were ritualistic, Niyamagraha, and those who understand the essence of things. Is those who understand the essence of things know how to adjust the details without adjusting the principles. Because the principle is the essence. And these things, it's called Siddhanta. Siddhanta means, you know, some of the perfect conclusion. Anta means the end. Siddha means perfect. So, it's interesting how devotees sometimes call other things Siddhanta. For example, right now there's a whole discussion going on with the GBC and others about whether ladies can become gurus. And some devotees say, well, we can't adjust the Siddhanta. But it's not part of the Siddhanta whether it's ladies become gurus or not. It's a detail. It's a detail. It's like it's not part of the Siddhanta that I'm wearing a dhoti. It's a detail. It's cultural. So cultural things can be adjusted according to time, place, and circumstance by someone who was realized, not by anybody. Make it by someone who's realized. So, therefore, as far as Ekadasi is concerned, one does what's favorable for remembering Krishna, which is the first rule in Krishna consciousness, and the second rule is never forget Krishna. So whatever is favorable under the direction of the Acharya. Like Prabhupada, we don't have any recollection of Prabhupada fasting completely on Ekadasi and staying awake. Prabhupada was very, very regulated. He would take rest. I mean, he would stay awake late at night to preach, that's true. But he would take rest. He would have a Ekadasi feast made for him. I remember when I joined the movement, we were making a Ekadasi feast for Prabhupada. You know, special things like Prabhupada's preparation of Gauranga potatoes. Gauranga potatoes, which was filled with sour cream and butter. I don't know if anyone's had Gauranga potatoes, but enough to actually coat your arteries to enable you to go back to Godhead sooner. But you know, we had Gauranga potatoes, we had, I mean, all sorts of things like chips and everything. It was just like, we used to look forward to Ekadasi because it was the day to actually eat more. It was just like, you know, oh, it's Ekadasi today. Wow, it's great. Get special preparations that we don't ordinarily get. So anyway, so one does what's needful. You know, preaching is important too. And of course, it is important to reduce unnecessary bodily things. We don't reduce necessities, we reduce bodily demands. Sometimes it's expressed that you actually reduce bodily necessities, but that's not the right use of the word necessity, because a necessity is a necessity. So you reduce bodily demands or mental demands. And one of the things I do on Ekadasi, you know, I try to chant more rounds, usually in 64 rounds, but I'm not doing a lot of other things. And then the hardest thing I do as I fast from watching the news on the Ekadasi. No CNN, you know, on the Ekadasi. So I just wait till the Ekadasi Purana to watch the news again. It's actually interesting. Prabhupada said devotees don't read the newspapers. So I follow that very strictly. I just look at the news on the internet. So. That's called following the letter of the law without the spirit of the law. You've heard of that before? That means, you know, I follow the law, but you're not really following what the law wants you to do. No, but actually, you know, it's not that I'm addicted to it. I just look at sometimes. You have to be aware. Prabhupada himself, even though Prabhupada said that devotees don't read newspapers, Prabhupada sometimes read newspapers, or had newspapers read to him, but he wasn't addicted to it. That's the difference. You know, Prabhupada, when there was an article about the movement or something like that. And Prabhupada was concerned also when he was on the planet with, somewhat with the Indian politics. You know, it's not that Prabhupada was just like completely aloof in every sense from the world. You know, you have to function in the world. But anyway, these things can be eliminated in Anekadasi. Certain things like that. And of course, grains and beans, that is obviously done. So, anyway, one has to be practical. I remember one devotee who was would stay up all night and on Anekadasi, but he couldn't chant because as soon as he started to chant, it would put him to sleep. So he stayed up all night and actually just like looked at the stock market all night, and that kept him awake because he was invested in the stock market. It was just like, something goes up, so it goes down. Okay, that's exciting. See, I was awake all night. And then sometimes the devotees tell the story that, I mean, it's just a story that's not, I don't accept the story because Prabhupada never told it, that Pallad Maharaj became Pallad Maharaj. You probably heard the story. Because on one day in Nrisimha Chaturdasi, this is when he was a Bharacha, you know, Bharacha, a drunkard. He was having an argument with his girlfriend on Nrisimha Chaturdasi, and he stayed awake all night because he was so upset with his girlfriend. And therefore, he became Pallad Maharaj in his next life. I mean, you have all these stories like that. You know, you've heard that story?
That's a standard. There's another one, too, Pallad. There's a couple like that.
Yeah, it's just like, huh. So therefore, you know, we should all just have arguments with our girlfriends or boyfriends or whatever, and stay awake all night for whatever reason. And then you go back to God. I mean, this is really not true. Did you become as good as Pallad Maharaj by having an argument with your girlfriend on Nrisimha Chaturdasi? Doesn't work like that. Anyway, but if you increase your hearing and chanting, then you get benefit, not simply by staying awake. The whole thing is not, it's not that staying awake gives you more benefit. It's that hearing and chanting. So you maximize your hearing and chanting. So Ekadasi is a stimulation for ecstatic love. As far as Krishna's transcendental qualities are concerned, they can be divided into three groups. One, the qualities pertaining to his transcendental body. Two, qualities pertaining to his transcendental speech. And three, qualities pertaining to his transcendental mind. Krishna's age, his transcendental bodily features, his beauty, and his mildness are qualities pertaining to his body. There's no difference between Krishna and his body, and therefore the transcendental features pertaining to his body are the same as Krishna himself. But because these qualities stimulate the devotee's ecstatic love, they've been analyzed as separate causes of that love. To be attracted by the qualities of Krishna means to be attracted by Krishna himself, because there is no real distinction between Krishna and his qualities. Krishna's name is also Krishna. Krishna's fame is also Krishna. Krishna's entourage, that means the people who hang out around Krishna, is also Krishna. Krishna and everything related with Krishna, which gives stimulation to love of Krishna, are all Krishna. But for our understanding, these items are or can be considered separately. Krishna is the reservoir of all transcendental pleasure. Therefore, the impetuses to love of Krishna, although seemingly different, are not actually distinct from Krishna himself. In the technical Sanskrit terms, such qualities as Krishna's name, fame, etc., are accepted both as reservoirs of and stimulation for ecstatic love of Krishna. In other words, all these different aspects of Krishna are full of ecstatic love when you get attracted to them, and they also stimulate you. In other words, when you look at them or consider them or think about them, they actually get you excited. Stimulation means excited, to get very excited about something. Krishna's age is considered in three periods. This is interesting. From his appearance day to the end of the sixth year is called Kamala. From the beginning of the sixth year up to the tenth year is called Pugunda. And from the tenth to the 16th year is called Kaishora. After the beginning of the 16th year, Krishna is called Yovana. Not Yavana. Yavana is like a rakshasa or something. Yovana, or a youth. And this continues with no change. Actually, Prabhupada called the deities in Chicago Kishore, Kishori. That's interesting. As far as Krishna's transcendental pastimes are concerned, they are mostly executed during the Kumara, Pugunda, and Kishore periods. His affectionate pastimes with his parents are executed during his Kumara age. His friendship with the cowherd boys is exhibited during the Pugunda period. And his friendship with the gopis is exhibited during the age of Kishore. Krishna's pastimes at Vrindavan are finished by the end of his 15th year, and then he is transferred to Mathura and Dwaraka, where all other pastimes are performed. And actually some of the acharyas say like 12th or 11th year Krishna was done. You hear this difference of opinion. Prabhupada says 15th year, which means he was 16 years old. At the end of the 15th year, he's 16. So that's what I accept because Prabhupada said. Srila Rupa Goswami gives us a vivid description of Krishna as the reservoir of all pleasures in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Here are some parts of that description. And then he goes into further delineation of the different ages. Krishna's Kaishora age can be divided into three parts. In the beginning of his Kaishora age, does everyone remember, what's the first age?
Kumara.
Okay, and Kishore starts at what age?
10.
Yeah, at the end of the 10th year. So in the beginning of his Kishore age, that is at the beginning of his 11th year, the luster of his body becomes so bright that it becomes an impetus for ecstatic love. Similarly, there are reddish borders around his eyes and a growth of soft hairs on his body. In describing this early stage of Kaishora, Kundalata, one of the residents of Vrindavan, you know Kundalata, your friend, said to her friend, "My dear friend, I have just seen an extraordinary beauty appearing in the person of Krishna. His blackish bodily hue appears just like the Indra Nila jewel. There are reddish signs on his eyes and small soft hairs coming out on his body. The appearance of these symptoms have made him extraordinarily beautiful." So, I mean, try to understand that it appears like Krishna's body is changing like our bodies. You know, you see similar things with little kids. You know, in the Kumara age, they're really cute and gurgly and things like that, and crawling. And so similarly, in Krishna's Kumara age, Krishna was actually crawling. And then his feature, you know, it appeared like he was getting older. But try to understand that it's Krishna's transcendental body and he's manifesting these things out of his own sweet will for the pleasure of his devotees and the interactions, the rasika interactions with his devotees. Just like it's described that when Radharani was just a little baby, Narada Muni picked her up, and then she manifested her, you know, full-grown form along with all the other gopis in the story. And then, after a little while, then she revealed to Narada Muni, you know, her whole pastimes and consciousness. And then after a while, then she became a little baby again. So it's not the same as us. I mean, I can't manifest my form as a little baby now, or even as a young man. I'm just stuck in one particular rut, which is an old person. I mean, some of you knew me. I mean, you knew me when I was a young man. I broke the ring when I was young. I was really young. Changing bodies, isn't it? Changing bodies. And when Krishna changes, he doesn't change his body. Ajopi samayama bhutanamni shropi sham. It's the same body, it's not changing. There's no veins in Krishna's body, Ashnaviram. It's just for the pleasure of his devotees, because they want to taste that particular ras when Krishna is in different ages. So Krishna manifests like that. In the spiritual world, Krishna's not manifesting in all these different ages. He's always Kaishora. He's always like 60, just like 15 and 11 months and 29 days or something. In this connection, of the 10th canto, 21st chapter, 5th verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami tells King Parikshit, "My dear king, I shall now describe how the minds of the gopis became absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. The gopis would meditate on Krishna's dressing himself just like a dancing actor and entering the forest of Vrindavan, marking the ground with his footprints. They meditate on Krishna's having a helmet with a peacock feather and wearing earrings on his ears and yellow-colored garments covered with jewels and pearls. They also meditated on Krishna's blowing his flute and on all the cowherd boys singing of the glories of the Lord." That is a description of the meditation which the gopis used to perform. Sometimes the gopis would think about his soft nails, his moving eyebrows, and his teeth, which were katechu colored from chewing pan. One description was given by a gopi to her friend. "My dear friend, just see how the enemy of a gaw has assumed such wonderful features. His brows are just like the brows of Cupid, and they are moving just as though they were dancing. The tips of his nails are so soft, it is as if they were dried bamboo leaves. His teeth are reddish, and so it appears that he has assumed a feature of anger. Under the circumstances, where is the chance for a young girl not to be attracted by such a beautiful feature and not to be afraid of becoming a victim to such beauty?" Krishna's attractive features are also described by Vrinda, the gopi after whom Vrindavana was named. She told Krishna, "My dear Madhava, your newly captivated smile has so captivated the hearts of the gopis that they are simply unable to express themselves. As such, they become bewildered and will not talk with others." All these gopis, the air is getting with that. All these gopis have become so affected that it is as if they had offered 3 sprinkles of water upon their lives. In other words, they have given up all their hope for the living condition. According to the Indian system, when a person is dead, there is a sprinkling of water on the body. Thus, the statement of Vrinda shows that the gopis were so enchanted by the beauty of Krishna that because they could not express their minds, they had decided to commit suicide. When Krishna arrived at the age of 13 to 14 years, whoops, skip this. His two arms and chest assumed an unspeakable beauty, and his whole form became simply enchanting. When Krishna attained 13 years of age, his two arms were challenging the trunks of elephants. His rising chest was trying to come to peace talks with the doors of jewels, and his two arms were minimizing the value of the bolts filed on doors. Who can describe the wonderful beauty of these features of Krishna? The special beauty of Krishna's body was his mild smiling, his restless eyes, and his world-enchanting songs. These are the special features of this age. There's a statement in this connection that Krishna, on arriving at this age, manifested such beautiful bodily features that his restless eyes became the playthings of Cupid, and his mild smile resembled a newly grown lotus flower. The enchanting vibration of his songs became a great impediment to the young girls, who were supposed to remain chaste and faithful to their husbands. At this age, Krishna enjoyed the Rasa Leela, exhibiting his power of joking with the cowherd girls and enjoying their company on the bushes of the bank gardens on the bank of the Yamuna. In this connection, there's the following statement. Throughout the whole tract of land known as Vrindavan, there were the footprints of Krishna and the gopis, and in some places, peacock feathers were strewn about. In some places, there were nice beddings in the bushes of Vrindavan gardens, and in some places, there were piles of dust due to the group dancing of Govinda and the gopis. These are some of the features which are due to the different pastimes invented by Sri Krishna in the place known as Vrindavana. There's the following statement by one gopi describing Krishna's attractive feature during this age. My dear friend, just see how all of a sudden in the sky of Krishna there is a powerful rising sun, and how this rising sun is minimizing the rays of our chastity moon. Our attraction for Krishna is so intense that it is drying up the lotus flower of our discrimination, and we are losing our senses in deciding whether we shall continue as chaste women or be victimized by the beauty of Krishna. My dear friend, I think that we have lost all hope of life. In the Kishora age, beginning from the 11th year and continuing up to the end of the 15th year, Krishna's arms, legs, and thighs become marked with three divisional lines. At that time, Krishna's chest challenged a hill of Markata jewels. His arms challenged the pillars of the Indranila jewel. The three lines of his waist challenged the waves of the river Jamuna. And his thighs challenged beautiful bananas. No, just bananas. Usually they say banana trees, but here it says bananas. One gopi said, with all these exquisite features of his body, Krishna is too extraordinarily beautiful, and therefore I am always thinking of him to protect me because he is the killer of all demons. The idea expressed in this statement is that the gopis were comparing their attraction for Krishna to an attack by demons. And to counteract their attraction for the beauty of Krishna, they were also turning to Krishna, hopefully because he is the killer of all kinds of demons. In other words, they were perplexed because on one hand they were attracted by the beauty of Krishna, on the other they needed Krishna to drive away the demon of such attraction. This Kishora age can be translated as adolescence. At the end of this period, all the gopis said, Krishna, the killer of the attraction of Cupid, and as such he disturbs the patience of all newly married girls. Krishna's bodily features have become so exquisite, it is as if they were all manifesting an artistic sense of the highest sort. His dancing eyes have dimmed the brilliance of the most expert dancer, and so there is no longer any comparison to the beauty of Krishna. Learned scholars therefore describe the features of his body at this time as Nava Yovana, newly invented youthfulness. At this stage of Krishna's bodily features, the conjugal love affairs with the gopis and similar pastimes become very prominent. Okay. Does anyone have any questions? We'll keep it short tonight. Questions?
Guru Maharaj,
yeah.
Along with Krishna being called Navarna Kishore,
yeah.
Navarna Yovana, he's also called Naval Kishore.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, why is he called Naval Kishore? That's my first question. And the second question is, in three phases of his...
Navyog means always youthful, yeah. Mm-hmm. New youth. Basically, new youth. New Kishore, because it's always like Nava Kishore. They call Nanda Kishore and Nava Kishore. He's called... Nava means it's always like a new experience to look at Krishna. Like if you see someone who's a... Or if you see someone who is young, it's newly young, you know, just new. And when you're old, it's old. You never say old for sure. Anyway. It's just like, you know, when you see someone young, it's different.
So Nava Kishore and Nava Yovana.
It means like, let's use the example of a fruit. Something like saying, oh, this is a nice ripe apple. And when you're old, you say, this is a rotten apple. Or using a plum, for example. You know what a plum is? You know what a prune is? A prune is an old plum. So it's like, oh, here's a fresh plum, or a fresh apple, or a fresh banana. That's what Navya Kishore means. And Navya Yavana means, you know, it was youthful, but a fresh youth. Not only always youthful, sometimes properly translated is always youthful. But it means like fresh, you know, just like really new. It's like a new experience when you see Krishna. It's always like a new experience.
So that black bodily hue, the blackish, bluish,
yes.
It comes in that age?
Yes. Yeah, but there's also reddish parts too. Like parts of his hands and fingernails and things like that. They're different colors. It's not only, he's not night, Krishna's like jet black. He's also the color of a new monsoon cloud. It's not really, you know, when the people have depict Krishna as black, you know, he's not really like that. Actually, there's one story when Krishna wanted, it's like a little racist story. When Krishna wanted, this is a true story, Krishna wanted to marry Radharani, and he thought, you know, I'm just too dark for her. You know, you've heard this story? And so he would take like turmeric and put it all over his body. You heard the story before. He put it all over his body so he'd look lighter. He'd match. I mean, it's even like that, you know, people are so racist sometimes that, you know, two disciples in Fiji got married and the man is much darker than the woman. They said, how could you marry? How could you say to the lady, how could you marry him? He's too dark for you. You know, it's just like, what? What are you talking about? He has his bodily consciousness. But anyway, so Krishna was sort of like manifesting that when he wanted to be as light as Radharani. It's funny, isn't it? Yeah, so like a rain cloud. And actually you see many people who have that sort of complexion in India. It's not like jet black, was it? Like here. It's not like this color. Krishna was not this color. You know, Krishna was like rain cloud. You know, many people have that complexion. And then also about Lord Chaitanya, they said golden. And so they think it's like this shiny, like you have a golden ring or something like that. It's like molten gold. Prabhupada had that complexion. Prabhupada was molten gold complexion. You know, sometimes people shiny, you know, like we have of course we have our Gaura-Nitai deities, and they're real shiny. But that's not what Lord Chaitanya's complexion was like. His complexion was molten gold. Like you see Prabhupada. First time I saw Prabhupada, the first day, I was in Prabhupada's room in the night, and Prabhupada was dressed in a gumsho, sitting on his bed. And he was, you know, his golden, molten gold complexion was beautiful to see Prabhupada like that. You know, glowing. But it's not the glowing that if you took a light meter, you could actually. It was like spiritual glowing. You know, some people go, oh. I remember, it was really funny. We made a Vyasa song for Prabhupada. And Prabhupada sat down a few times, and then Prabhupada left. And then we looked at the footprints, and we thought they were glowing. But actually, it was just, I don't know if you know what velour is. It's a material that, you know what I'm talking about, that if you push it a certain way, it looks like it's almost like
a velvety material.
Yeah, velvet type material.
This pillow here on top, it's like a little bit of that.
Yeah, a little bit of that. So if you look at it from a different angle, it glows differently. So we were thinking the pillow was effulgent that Prabhupada sat on. Maybe it was, but anyway. We just knew devotees. And what do we know? And then someone at Mayapur knows says that Prabhupada never walked on the ground. But I was with Prabhupada. I mean, I ate the dust from his footprints. And he left footprints. Isn't that? I was there. You know, it's not just like some you know, story or lack of faith or something. I was there. I was on the beach with Prabhupada, and there were like footprints. And I took the sand and I threw it in my mouth. So at that point, he did walk on the ground. Maybe other times he floated, but I don't know. You know, but people...
Just that one time he left the footprint for you.
Yeah, but people have all these like far out mystical stories they tell, isn't it? Like you hear the devotees say that Prabhupada looked at me and he saw inside my soul. How do you know what Prabhupada was thinking of, isn't it? You know, he looks inside your soul. Maybe he was, but maybe he doesn't. You know, so they're trying to actually, you hear all these memories, you know, they think they know what Prabhupada was thinking. I don't know what Prabhupada was thinking. Prabhupada might have been looking at me and thinking, what a rascal. How did this guy ever make it into the Hare Krishna movement? You know? Or he might have been thinking, you know, boy, he's ugly or something. You know, you don't know. It says that no one should try to guess the mind of a pure devotee. So, but you hear all these stories of people guessing the mind of Prabhupada. Who knows? I mean, what, you know, obviously he was doing it to please Krishna, that much we know. But it's just like, Prabhupada was looking at my soul. Maybe he was. Maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. I don't know. Anyway, so sometimes we tend to mystify different experiences we have when they're actually not that. I mean, being with Prabhupada is very mystical, sure. But we tend to add certain elements to it. You know, sort of like elaborate on it or decorate, reflect, or the, I don't know how to use the word flesh it out. But anyway, I mean, just like add things to it which aren't, weren't true. Anyway, what other questions we have? I've heard your question.
The Nectar of Devotion talks about different the gopis, they said very clearly that their attraction is too strong.
Yeah.
So strong they need to be protected from Krishna, by Krishna.
Yeah.
Okay, so the gopis are aware of their attraction to Krishna. They're fully, fully aware of it to the point that it's irritating them.
Yeah.
Because they can't stop thinking about Krishna.
That, and also it interferes with their respectability in society. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the chastity thing, you know. So, yeah, they're just like upset, you know, trying. I mean, it's like an irresistible force pulling you. Or sometimes, you know, just like even in this world, like sometimes a young boy or young girl is attracted to each other and it's just like irresistible. And they understand it's not good for me, you know. He doesn't have any money, he's from the wrong caste. he's a Muslim. You know, whatever. Isn't it? You see that, you know, just like, and you explain to your daughter or something like that, this guy's a drug addict. Is this all right? I will save him with my love. Is that? Just like the funny thing I was telling Pranesha on the way over here, that a man and woman get married, and the man is thinking she won't change. And the woman is thinking she can change him. And the opposite happens. She changes immediately, or within a few days. And he never changes. Like we say, with men, it's what you see is what you get. Right? So anyway, but people have these irresistible things, and they're thinking, this isn't good for me. Or, you know, with eating. It looks like eating food rather than a romantic thing, you know, thing. I'm on diet. I shouldn't be eating this. Or I have a heart disease. I shouldn't be eating this. So. And they fight against it, isn't it? They fight against the urge. Isn't it? Yeah, I mean, it happens. You know, you fight against the urge to eat something. And you think, then after a while you just justify, you say, Just once. I mean, if I just do once, it's not going to hurt me. But the problem is when you do something once, then that's it. You've actually opened up the floodgates. Isn't it? You open up the floodgates, and then every day, you know, there's another excuse. But anyway, so I mean, in other words, there's irresistible urges. Like if someone sees a mobile phone, a young person sees a mobile phone, it's an irresistible urge to pick it up. I know I shouldn't do it, you know. Or if my watch rings, I know I'm in the middle of class. I know it. I'm not supposed to look at messages in the middle of class, but I'll look at it. Isn't it? I mean, so you have this juxtaposition of the irresistible attraction, and you're not wanting to give into it for a variety of reasons, even in this material world. You know, or anger. You know, anyway, just all this. So these things are all reflections of the irresistible attraction that gopis feel for Krishna. Because first of all, nobody likes to lose control. That's another issue. Like to be controlled by some urge, you lose your autonomy at that point. So the gopis are thinking, you know, I'm not choosing to do this. It's just pulling me. What can you do? And they try to pull back. Like the gopis sometimes would say, why don't you stop talking about Krishna? You're always talking about Krishna. Every minute you're mentioning Krishna's name, and then the other gopi will say, but you just did the same thing. They say, I can't forget Krishna. Why can't I forget Krishna? Oh, I'm always thinking this Krishna. Please, keep Krishna out of my mind. And they're doing the same thing. It's irresistible. But they want to maintain that. They want to maintain control. But there's a loss of control. There's actually a loss of control when one has a strong urge in the material world, in the spiritual realm. And it's frustrating sometimes when you can't control your own self. Is that? You can't control your own self. It's, I shouldn't be dancing with that Krishna in the middle of the night. You know, I have a baby, and I have, you know, a husband. What am I doing? But then when Krishna plays his flute, the hell with the husband. The hell with the baby, you know. Can you imagine that? I mean, the point is that, I mean, woman's love for the baby is so intense. Like with my mother, she's forgotten everything in this world except for me. She doesn't know whether she's in New York or Miami. Yeah, I call her on the phone. I said, hi, Mom. She said, well, yeah, they just transported my apartment to Miami. I said, yes, Mother. I understand. Yeah, but I call her. She doesn't remember anything. She doesn't even remember whether she was married. You know, she asked, was I married before? I said, yes, you were. So what was my husband's name? Kenneth. I don't remember him. You sure I was married? Yes, she's forgotten all that. But I call her on the phone. Oh! It's Pure Krishna Goswami. Actually, the other day, she couldn't remember my legal name. She just remembered Pure Krishna Goswami, which is really ecstatic for me. I said, I'm your son. I said, Bruce. I said, I don't know, Bruce, I know Veer Krishna Goswami. I said, wow! This is ecstatic. So the point I'm making is that, you know, so let's talk about the gopis. They have these little babies there. I mean, when you have a little baby, a lady with a little baby, right, Radha Baba? When she was a little baby, it was just like, you forgot that you had a husband, didn't you? So who's that guy? Oh, he's just a brick guy who brings the money in the house. Anyway, so you just forget. That's nature. So here are the gopis. I mean, just talking about the gopis. And they have this cute little baby who's a resident of Vrindavan. I mean, he's not just an ordinary, like, snotty little baby there. This baby is actually a great pure devotee, too, you know. And, you know, attractive, very attractive. And then, but then the gopi's just like, isn't it? They hear Krishna's flute, they're just like, oh, man, take the kid away already. And they just go and join Krishna. That's pretty far out, isn't it? If you think about it. And they just join Krishna. And there's milk. Also, they're cooking on the stove, and the milk boils over, and it just like makes a mess in the kitchen. Can you imagine how messy it is when all the milk boils over? And their husband is yelling at them. And the husband gets so upset he tries to imprison them, and then they have to leave their material bodies behind and join Krishna. So that's like an irresistible force. There's no question of immovable object. You understand? Because the force is so irresistible, there's nothing that can keep the gopis immovable. Gotta have Krishna. And that, but they're struggling against it too, because they know. Like you hear here, they know this is not proper. This goes against everything I was ever taught by my parents. And still I can't resist. And then they pray to Krishna, Krishna, please give me the strength to resist your attractiveness. That's pretty far out, isn't it? Krishna, give me the strength. All right, anyway, a little rustic stuff. Okay, that's enough for tonight. Thank you all on YouTube, not YouTube, and Facebook lands for joining us. And you see we have a small crew today, soon to be bigger. And the famous Mahamantra, some of you may remember him from the last ice age.